Hello, everyone. This is Samuel Gebre. In today's conversation, I will be speaking with Evans Kiragu, the maker of the game The Presidents that went to the top of the charts in the US and is currently in international release. This follows the first conversation we had with Kari Firstus, CEO, into the gaming space. And now this goes into one of the smaller studios and how they're trying to grow the business. And this conversation will focus on the journey that Evans and his team have had to the climax of getting to the top of the charts.
Well, my journey with games starts many years ago, more or less around 6 years, 7 years ago. Did the whole thing around game development and trying to come up with games like casual games, virtual reality games, augmented reality, and all these things. Did that for about 4 years. Got to a point where I hit the hard wall where I realized that making money from games is not easy. And at that point, I started looking at what's the path of least friction when it comes to making money from games. Started looking into different things. And then, as I said, about 2 years ago, I stumbled upon hyper-casual. And essentially, hyper-casual games are games for non-gamers. So they're the simple games that people play when they have an extra 5 minutes. And unlike the hardcore games, you don't have to remember where you left off yesterday and which level you're in. They're just extremely very simple game just for you to enjoy over short bursts of excitement and accomplishment. So I started looking into that, did that for a few months. Things were looking good, started talking to a few publishers here and there. And so towards the end of last year, when Kari First were coming into the picture, I remember we were about more or less around 82, maybe 81 games in. This is a concept we had tried out in the market, in and out, in and out. Some were showing potential, some were not. And so I became very intrigued at how Kari First were approaching the whole thing, because they were not just looking at it from their point of view, which is like an African publisher, but they were able to bring in Crazy Lab, which is a massive company, to have a more focused look at the African space in hyper casual. So to me, it was a no-brainer, you know, because I've been in hyper casual for 2 years. Here comes Kari First, and they're coming along not only with the funding that they have, but also this huge name in hyper casual space, which is Crazy Labs. So I immediately applied. At that time, I had a team of three, so we were very excited. Went through the stages, and before we knew it, it was November, and we were part of the hub, and we got to do some really exciting things while we were working with Crazy Labs and Kari First. They hosted us in Cape Town at their offices for about 5 months or so. Got to learn a lot of how they do things, how they see the gaming space. And long story short, that whole experience, I think, bore the fruit, which is the game that we had. Because coincidentally, literally the last day of the incubation hub is when we came up with an idea to make a game around being a president and what the fun activity of being a president, the humor around it and all these things. It had nothing to do with our current political state, though we were heading into the elections, but it was completely out of a lot of learnings that we had gotten from the hub. And so, long story short, that was kind of like the entire journey and how Kari First came into the picture.
I mean, can you just like tell me what kind of games that you were making out of the 80 just examples of any interesting that kind of like popped up in the space as well? And also just tell me about your core team. Who else are you working with?
Yeah. So around that time, which is November last year, we were a team of three. So that's me. I have two more devs on the team, namely that's Jeffrey Gishoke and Naftali Kimutai. So really talented guys. I'm equally also a developer, programmer. So we were a team of three hardcore programmers looking into hyper-casual. So the hyper-casual space is very interesting. And I say this because when I talk about 83 games, I'm talking about 83 different concepts and tries at trying to get a game that has a massive, what we call mass appeal. So unlike other games, instead of staying like, I don't know, 6 months working on a game and then eventually going to test into the market and then seeing it's a fail, and then you've wasted 6 months, you've wasted money. Hypercasual kind of works different, where we work on prototypes that takes about a week, and then these weekly concepts, we test them out in the market and see if it has any potential. And that's where publishers come in, because we make the concepts, we do what we do best, and then they come in with the money and they help us to test these concepts. So all these 83 concepts were basically prototypes, trying to see which concept has a good market appeal. Normally, we are looking at the cost of acquiring users. How low is it? The lower it is, the better. We have a very keen focus on the Western market. So when you're testing out these games, you're testing it on the US market and trying to see if you'll get a very low cost of acquiring users on the iOS store or the App Store over there. And we definitely had some really cool concepts going. I remember one of my favorite concepts was there was a time, I think sometime last year, that this very famous film called The Matrix, I think they were doing like a rerun or something, I can't remember. And so we made this really cool game where the player would shoot a bullet, and then you as the player would basically now bend it through corners to try and get it to its target. So instead of the normal like first person shooter where you're shooting straight bullets, this one you were bending the bullets. It was really cool. It showed really good market potential. We went forward with the next stages, but unfortunately, just when we were about to publish, one of the KPIs didn't align just well. We had to kill it. and many other games that we work on, it's a very interesting space because on top of being heavily data-driven, when it comes to testing out this concept, it's also very detached to emotion. So we test a lot of concepts in the market, and as soon as you see something that's in the line, you kill and you move on to the next one. So that's the space. That's how those are some of the concepts we worked on. I'm trying to think if I can think of another one, because it's been a roller coaster ride, coming up with concepts, letting go of some.
What was the first one? You remember the first one?
Of course I do. I definitely remember that one. This was based on us. So in attempts of trying to get a very low cost of acquiring users, we tend to work on games that already have an appeal in the market. So I remember the first game we ever worked on in hypercasual was a game called The Pointing Game. And essentially the pointing game was based on a very viral clip. I think I can send it to you after this. And I think it's called Shadow Boxing, if I'm not wrong, where basically you have two guys standing face to face, and then one guy points in a random direction, and then it's the kind of like the role of the other guy to look in a random direction. If the random direction I point is the same one that you look, it's a win for me. So it's kind of like this really silly game that we did. It had several like viral videos going on in the US. And so we had a very low cost of acquiring users because it was based on a viral concept, but then it was hard to retain users because virality is very volatile, you know? But that was the first concept we ever worked on in Hypercasual. Still remains one of my best concepts to work on because it was a very silly idea.
Serious are the best.
Exactly. It's there's magic in the simplicity of being silly.
Yeah. Can I ask? Like, I'm trying to understand like the business of it as well for the 6 years that you guys were working on. What's the model that you used? And, you know, what was like even the reaction from, say, your parents and whatnot? Like, you know, you went to school, I'm assuming, like, what do you self, are you a self-developer or did you go to school? And then they see that you're trying to make games, because that in most African households is still, you know, a shaky ground to say I'm making games.
Yeah. I think I was a bit lucky given the space we are currently in, which is, you know, the gaming space, because I remember, first of all, the course I did in uni was in tech. And then when I finished, you know, I came up with the agenda of trying to do video games. And back then, this was around, I'd say, maybe 2016, I'm not sure, around that time, I remember I decided to make a very, very simple game. It was a game about racing planes. So it was called Wings of Fury, and you're racing a bunch of planes in the air. And after finishing the game, I obviously did this in my parents' house, in my room, saying I'm working on the next big thing. And then I finished the game. I was really excited about it. And I sent out a bunch of press releases to pretty much every media house that we have around. Back then, I mean, the quality was pretty bad, but back then it was really good. So I got there were a few features here and there, got to be on TV, and I think that's when my parents were like, "Okay, I think there's something here. I
Okay.
think there's something here." And they were like, "Okay, just continue, proceed with caution." It wasn't like a full on yes, and they kept a keen eye on what I was doing. But over time, they also started investing in it, not only emotionally, but making sure I do the right classes when it comes to like the online courses I was trying to do. And kind of like to be honest, at that time it was kind of like stumbling in the dark, hoping to find something that you can monetize because the market just wasn't ready to that point. I still don't feel it is, and maybe that's one of the biggest roles that Carry Fast is doing in this space. In terms of monetization, so it really depends on the angle you want to approach. You can go the investor way and get an investor to invest in the studio and all these things. But having been in the space for a while, I knew that was a tough call. So I decided to work with publishers from very early on. So I 2 years ago when I focused on hypercasual, started talking to the biggest publishers I could find out there. And it's a very the gaming industry works on a basis of what you can do. So it's not what degree you have and all these things, what can you do? And so from very early on, when we were sending in prototypes just for review, even if it's just a small pitch, we were very encouraged to see that some of the publishers from France and from Israel would look at what we're doing and be like, "I think there's something here." And most of them did give us a funding model. So it's basically a situation where they'd pay you for the like upkeep as you continue working on these games. With the hope and the promise that once you get a game with good KPIs, then the rev share will come in and compensate them for the investment that they made. So that's how the studio was surviving before that, before the big hit that we had. And as you're working with these publishers under this model, they're investing as much as they can into you. So they're teaching you about the market trends, the numbers. They are literally opening up their trade secrets and letting you know, like, this is how games work, and this is that, this is that. Because at the end of it all, it's supposed to pay out. It's supposed to be a big payout for everyone. Over time, over the about 2 years I was working in the space, we worked with several publishers around the space. The 83 games I'm mentioning were pitched to very different publishers. Pretty much, it was all over the space. And I think it had a lot to do with how we ended up with the president, because we were collecting data from a lot of different publishers and moving on to the next one. You start with a publisher, a few months down the line, you realize this is not working out because everyone has their own demands, and as a studio, we have our own goal and desires. And so we moved around quite a lot before settling on Crazy Labs eventually, and then Carry Fast coming into the picture.
Yeah, I mean, okay, and tell me about this, the big success that we're talking about, the president. So that you came up with a concept on the last day of the 5 months program in Cape Town, and then what happened?
So just a few weeks. I say like over the couple of the 4 or 5 months we were in the hub, I think we were leading up to the president. And the reason I'm saying this is because the president in its own is a manifestation of everything we had learned while we were in the hub. So I'm just going to focus on two things. The first one being humor, and the second one being power. So as we were studying the markets, and so literally we were in the hub, we were not learning anything new in terms of the technical skills we had. What we were learning is the other side of the table, like the numbers, the data, the money, and all these things that go into making a successful game. So we studied a lot of data around market trends. We were like a walking fact-checking book on what is trending in the US. It was a lot of data. And you basically pick a topic. Let's say today Trump is trending in the US and has been trending as number one for the last couple of years. So can you do anything fancy around Trump? Because if he's trending, there's a good probability you'll acquire users at a lower cost. And did that for a while, tested a few concepts here and there, didn't work out until towards the end of the hub when I looked at it from a very different angle. And I was thinking, the thing about being a president is because everyone wants to be a president, but not everyone will be a president. And if you listen to people talking, they're talking about what they do as a president. So it's about the power. People, everyone is saying, I'll do this, I'll do that. But in reality, it's the power that you feel would be immense and you'd be able to do a lot of things. And then quite early on, we had Crazy Labs obviously flew in their publishing manager to be with us in the hub and advise us on all these things. CurryFast also had their people on site. And quite early on, when I pitched the idea, I'm really grateful for this because it gave us the direction we went with. They basically told us playing the role of a president is really cool and there's potential there. However, people don't like to get serious. You don't want to be a president and you're talking about the constitution and this and that and this and that. And so we decided to zone in on the humor. So it's about being a powerful president, but making very silly, hilarious decisions as you go. And that was the recipe for the present. So from the trailer to the game to the levels, we designed everything around those 2 points. And it worked like complete magic. I wouldn't say magic because we had the data, we kind of had an idea it would work. But that's how we came up with the president. And since we came up with it on the last few days of the hub, we left South Africa, came back to Kenya, continued working on it. We had many, many calls with CurryFast and Crazy Labs as we were working on the concept. It was literally a guided process as to how we'd be able to achieve what we were going for. Luckily for us, the president was doing quite well in terms of numbers. It passed literally every stage first try. So you do the first test, it passed second, third, fourth, fifth. We normally have about five tests. It cleared the whole table. Only one, like if you test once, it goes through. So it was very exciting to see that. And
What do you mean by that? What kind of test are we talking about? And this is like with the public, or how does that work?
yes. So I'll just run through the 5 steps on a very high level basis. So as I've mentioned before, the first one is just trying to test how easy it is to acquire users. So that's the CPI test, cost of acquisition. So if the cost of acquisition is low, you're looking good. This is a viral, potentially viral concept you're working on with a good market appeal. So once that's done, you move on to the next stage. This stage, you now make a full game and test the retention. So how many guys are coming back the next day? The president did really well on that. I think we did about 44% of users were coming back the next day. Normally in hyper-casual, anything above 30 is good. So 44 is excellent. Once you do that, then you move on to the next stage where you're testing the return per user. Because now you have the acquisition costs, you have the returning percentage. Now you can kind of like get numbers on how profitable the game is. So that we call that the ARPU stage. If the game is bringing in money, then now I think things are about to start accelerate. So now you move on to the next stage, which we call scaling. At this stage, now you start getting the big numbers. You start climbing the top charts. You start hitting the top 100 games in the US. Not really top. You'll stagnate somewhere between 80 to 100. At this point, they're acquiring about 100,000 users a day and trying to see if the game still holds water in terms of profitability. And then if you pass scale, now you're going to worldwide release. At that point, now the gates are open. It's not just about the US, it's about the global market. That's when the game will hit the top charts in several countries. For us, we hit the top charts in the US, Canada, Australia, several countries in Europe. We continue to do the same. I think Kenya, we just hit number 2 yesterday. Number 1 on iPad. So there's a lot of numbers around this. I wouldn't mind sending you like a detailed breakdown of everything, but that's the scale. That's the position where the game is. We say it's in worldwide release. We are constantly updating it, but acquiring thousands and thousands of users every single day to engage with the content.
I mean, it seems like from the word go, the way you've approached the whole space has been not just make games and then see what happens, but hey, okay, I'm making this, but I need to work on the marketing angle, which is like talk to, right? Put press releases and be on TV and get the hype. In a sense, that's the first step, I guess, acquiring more people. But you were doing it from the beginning, seems like, and now it's at a different level, at a very high level, but it's not just making games, it's both the business angle and the game. It seems like you, at least now, that recipe seems like a recipe for a win, for success. Can you like give me an overall latest number of how many downloads you've had on the game, how many or hours of playtime it's had, and then kind of explain how the monetization works? on a game like the president.
So I'm definitely I'm even from way back. I think when we were starting out in game dev, we were watching a lot of content around game dev. So kind of started to learn about press releases and press kits and all these things. At the start, it was good. You'd get featured here and there, but it wasn't translating to users. It was like you'd get featured here and your interview would have thousands of views, but then that's about it. Gather like 200 downloads. But you know, over time we learned that when you're marketing, you market to supposed to target your audience and not just everyone, which I think is something you were doing wrong. But now that we're in the industry this many years later on, when we talk about marketing, we're literally targeting our target audience. So it's very specific to a very specific niche or mass market, depends. So that's how we're doing things. For the other question that you've asked, what was it again?
How do you do the business aspect of the president, for example? How do you monetize it?
Okay, so the president, first of all, falling into hyper casual. On top of that, it falls into free to play games. So free to play games, we monetize through ads, and every single thing that we're doing in the game is geared towards making sure you make the most money from ads. So if I'm talking about low cost of acquiring users, fast forward to the ARPU stage when we're now testing profitability. What basically that means is we take this game, we put in ads, and we check how many users will be playing through the game, what numbers we'll be getting back in terms of ads. Normally for a hyper casual game, they normally have a lifetime of about 7 days. So they are not the most intense long-term games. It's about 7 days, maybe 14 days on a really good game like the President. After 14 days, we expect the numbers to drop. So the business side of it is that from the time the users start playing all the way to the end, they've watched enough ads to offset the cost of acquiring a user. And then on top of that, we make it not just blasting people with ads, but we make it such that they become an integral part of the experience. So for example, in the President, you'll see that as you're playing, you see these options. Since it's a narrative game, you see these options to say something in the game, but then for you to say it, you need to see an ad. So it's part and parcel of playing the game. For you to have the best experience, you need to watch ads. And that on our end offsets the need to put the game out there to be for users to buy in order to play. So ads is the general way of making money around hyper casual games. There are a few here and there that do have an option to buy out ads, then you can just have a full-on experience without the ads. It's something we're also looking into with the president, but as of now, we're making money through ads as the main platform. In terms of numbers, I think this week we should be hitting around 5 million downloads. At the moment, we're really focused on pushing the game onto as many top charts as possible all over the world into different countries and all these things. We are really happy this week about iPad. iPad is doing very well. It is number one currently. It's kind of it's a big deal in the industry because for the president, I think when probably CurryFast were getting in touch, we were doing really well around number one, number two. But since then, we've hit number one on iPad, iPhone, Android devices in the US. It's like the perfect trifecta. It doesn't normally happen, and that's really, really good. For something that we worked on quite tirelessly. So
Just for the record, it's in one category or in all free-to-play games.
in free-to-play games, hit number one all across. In the US, we also did hit number one all categories on Android. So like we were literally above TikTok. That was the best day ever. But yes,
When was it?
I think what 2 years, 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I can go through the data and get to the exact date on that one.
I mean, that
But
is.
you know, it's very competitive for the overall space. Like you sit there for one day, you're out.
I mean, that's pretty impressive to be number one above TikTok in the US in a global space for a Kenyan game. It's pretty impressive. But also, when I'm hearing about that, oh, okay, so the games are also on iOS. But I would have assumed are you targeting, I guess the US market is very, it's just mobile and mainly on iOS, not necessarily even Android as much. But how do you approach that when you're making the games? How do you approach the market of first, it's going to be a mobile game, obviously. And then how do you decide what's Android, what goes on iOS?
Yeah, so everything that we do as a studio is data-driven. So there is no decision that we make that doesn't have the numbers behind it. So to explain the numbers behind that, the first build that we do is an iOS build. Reason being, as you've said, the iOS devices are quite a lot in the US. Second build we do is the Android one. I wouldn't say they're less. Maybe I'd say 2/3 iOS, a third Android, something like that. And the main reason, as you probably also know, is in the US, that's where the ads make more money. So the purchasing power of the US users is quite high. So if you show an ad, you get paid a lot more. And these markets are categorized. So we have the Taiwan market, which is the US, Japan, Australia, the UK. Those are really big markets where ads pay quite a lot. So topping the charts in those countries is the goal, because if you hit the number one place, then you're not only acquiring users through marketing, but by being number one, you also gather a lot of organic users. So the organic users are just good profit because you didn't spend money acquiring them. So that's why we push it to the very top of the charts on iOS and Android. Obviously, to get the top of the charts, there is a lot of money that goes into it, and that money has to be profitable. So the game is profitable from a user acquisition point of view, and even more profitable from an organic user's point of view by virtue of being number one on the store. So if I enter the store, I see your game, I download, that's good numbers. So that's kind of like the process. So iOS and Android, US, that's because it's the biggest market. For the other small segments, we do make money from them, definitely, but the focus is on the US and the other Taiwan countries that I've mentioned. And now that we've hit the top charts in all those countries, then now we start looking at the tier two markets. So we have India, we have the Philippines, Vietnam. So these are markets we start looking into that are also quite profitable, and it's quite easy to raise the top charts. Then once that's going on, now the stage we are in, which is the worldwide release, we're looking into the tier three markets. So we have Africa as a whole. We have parts of Asia, and these are markets that are not as profitable, but still profitable. So you can see now how the tire, where you start focusing on the US and then come down as you're going.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I don't want to get into the details of how the partnership that you have is with the partners you're working with, but in terms of when you're doing the initial marketing for the game itself, how much of that initial investment is coming from you? How much of that is coming from the partners? And then do you have kind of like a profit sharing? I think you said that with the publishers and everybody else. How does that work? And I think you said it's so far been a profitable game. Are you able to kind of give us numbers on what how profitable it is?
So that's the overall model that we've been working on. However, it's very I wouldn't say it's common, I'd say it's very specific, because for you to get any sort of deal going with a publisher, you kind of have to be really good at what you're doing. So and it's something I usually say whenever I'm talking to studio founders, it's work on your quality. If it's really, really good and if the publishers think it's good, then they'll put an offer on the table. So that's how it works. The deal basically says we'll fund the overall costs around operating the studio. And in return, basically what you have to do is make sure you're meeting a set number of prototypes and market and certain KPIs in terms of market appeal. So let's say the target is we want to test maybe two games that have a CPI of less than a dollar. So you start working and ideating and looking at the data around this. So think of it as research and development phase that is funded by the publisher. When that's put on the table, something that's also put on the table is the conditions of when and what happens when you do pass the initial marketability test. Normally for a publisher, they're looking to make back their money, and also on top of that, make money on the money they're going to put into marketing the game, that's one, and then make back the money that they've been investing into the studio. So more or less, if you have a really good deal, you're looking at around a 50-50 split. Due to the investment, it can go down to around 50-40, 40 for the studio, 50 for the publisher. It just depends on the type of deal that you have with the publisher. In terms of what I have with Crazy Labs, that's obviously, as you can expect, not something I can talk about, but I'm just giving you like an overall of how the industry works. And then when the money comes in, these guidelines will get then guide how much money each party is making. But I can tell you that if a game goes big to the extent that the president is going, or games that have gone even bigger than that, the amount of money that will probably go into the studio is good enough to give you a runway for quite some time. It's about 3 years runway just as a studio to continue doing what you're doing. And on top of that, to grow your team, because you know, you're expected to keep on getting better, getting more talented guys. We have a huge pool of talented developers around the space in Kenya, and getting them onboarded into the industry and doing things the right way, making the big games. That's kind of like how everything works. And I'm trying to think if there's numbers I can go to without...
No, not necessarily. I think that gives a good picture of if you're able to have leeway to keep working for 3 years from one game, that gives a good picture of not necessarily going into the details of it. But and then that also goes into the next question I was going to ask, like, you know, what are the plans for, you know, getting more people, more developers into the team? How big do you want to, do you think you will be in the next 1 year, 2 years? What other games are in the pipeline? What should we be expecting from you in the next couple of months?
Yeah, that's a good question, because it's what is actively on my mind every day. at the moment, we've grown the team slightly. We went from being three about 2 months ago. We are now five. The workload goes up. The income also goes up. So it only makes sense to grow. So we are currently five. By the end of this month, we will be 10. And it's a very delicate balance of trying to make sure the magic stays within the team, and at the same time, making sure that you have enough workforce to make the next game easier to make. Because we did have some challenges with the president. So the plan I have at the moment is grow the team to around 10 people, maybe 8 to 10. I'm good with that. Really talented individuals that will keep the train moving. We are looking to hopefully redo the same stunt before the end of the year with another game. I think it will be the perfect thing for us. So yeah, we're looking to redo it again. And the reason why I'm saying this is because we are no longer newbies in the space, you know. It's expected that we've learned everything. We have taken a game to the top of the US charts and top globally in many different countries. So we know the steps. Right now, when we start working on a game, we are not working from a point of view where we are unsure. We can start working on step one and implementing things that will be in step five because we know they exist. So things should be a lot faster. So we are a lot more confident. Our skill set has gone up. I think we definitely have the right networks to make it again. And that's how things are looking. As the studio is going, we are hoping to retain the same. We're hoping to remain in the same space, that's Hyper Casual, at least for the foreseeable future, around 2 years. Looking to make even bigger hits. The present is big, but we know we can do even bigger than that. And so we are looking to definitely be back in the top charts. We want to make it our home.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good goal, always be above TikTok. Okay, just on hindsight, I'm thinking maybe I should ask you for just a ballpark figure. Just to give my story a punch as well. I don't know, say if it's more than a million, more than $2 million, that whatever it is, the number that you think the president is going to generate for your studio.
That's a tricky number to give, but I can give you the average income that a normal hit would make without specifying that's our thing. That's what we'd be expecting to come in. But yes, I think you just hit it with the right one. For a good hit, a hit that stays in the top charts for a while, the studio is looking at around $1 million coming in from that game, somewhere around there. Sorry?
Is it for the whole game or for a time period?
Let me just explain that. That's a good question. So per user, we expect the user is going to be in the game for around 7 to 14 days. That's per user. But then the cost of acquiring users does go higher over time. And so market-wise, on a global market, a hyper-casual game is marketable for around 2 2.5, if you're lucky, 3 years. So the $1 million is the amount of money you'll make over the period that the time is the game is marketable. So if you have a 50-50 split with a publisher, then you're looking at a revenue share of around 2 million, total revenue share of around $2 million, with $1 million going to the studio. If you have anything less, those are roughly the numbers that are quite common. So the reason why I've said those numbers is because they're out there. There are a ton of videos on YouTube that talk about this thing. Some of the different publishers talk about them. So I can openly share about that. But with the president, unfortunately, the terms don't allow me.
No worries. But it's also interesting that the life cycle of a game is like 2 weeks, 3 weeks max for per individual per user. Unlike, I don't know, what was the Candy Crush? Like, you play it for 3 years. So the model has to be different for users to choosing.
When you look into it's kind of like think of it as a linear graph, and at the very peak of the linear graph you have hyper casual games, and at the very base at axis 0 0 you have hardcore gamers. So it's kind of like a feeding funnel. So we as hyper casual developers, we get them millions of downloads and millions of users. We get over 50 million users. They start playing our games, and while they're playing our games, they watch a bunch of ads. These ads are about casual games. So they go from hyper casual, they start playing casual. They play casual for a while, they now enter mid-core into hardcore. So now you are then. So it's kind of, we consider hyper casual games as feed apps, so because they feed into the industry. They're kind of like the entry point. And now I think it's like a full circle moment where I was saying we make games for non-gamers because we bring them into the industry.
That's a good explanation of because when I think of games as well or the gaming industry, usually I would not be thinking about it like playing a game on your phone was never like how I thought about it. But that is what that's a market that you are in. And that's a huge market, especially for the developing world where everybody will have a smartphone in the next half a decade. And if and it seems like that, at least and not necessarily just the developing world, but the whole world. If you're marketing it to that mass market, then you have a huge market. Unlike when it's the core gamers who are either on console and PC, that's a niche market, and I see the difference. Speaking of, like, what are you know, when you think about where the market is going in the future, how are you thinking about it, and how are you approaching this, and on that curve, do you plan on coming down on that curve, sending people to your own games down the line?
Definitely. I'll start with the second one because it's always, again, something I'm thinking about. Because the hyper casual space is a lovely place to be. But at the very core of who I am, I know I'm a gamer. And I know that, making big games is something I'd want to look into in the future. So I'm still very unsure, honestly, about that. The reason for that is because the hyper casual space is very addictive. We move very fast, we make concepts very fast, we test them very fast. We have the data around how things are moving and all these things. Like, it's a very exciting place to be in. When you move downwards toward the curve, now you're looking at not only bigger investments, but bigger risks. Now you're looking at spending not just a week making a game, but 6 months making a game and seeing if it works, which is a big risk that not anyone is willing to take. So it's kind of evolving. I'm very committed to hyper casual at the moment, but in the next 1 year, I don't know how things will be looking. But I think in terms of just how the entire market is looking, I'll take it from two angles. I'll take the global one, and then I'll take the Africa one because it's also quite interesting. In terms of the global industry, I think we're heading towards a very interesting space where we are starting to evolve into more and more into the curve. Every now and then, if you open up the App Store, it doesn't matter which country you're in, and you look at the top charts, there's always about four hyper casual games. That's kind of like how things are. So that means that more and more people are getting into gaming, more and more people are seeing interesting concepts and downloading. And if you look at like the data behind it, you'll see that during this entire COVID period, the only one genre that has continued to grow year on year is hyper casual. So casual games are dropping, hardcore games are dropping, but hyper casual games are growing. That's because everyone is really getting addicted to these small, silly games. that only monetize through ads. There's very little friction to players when they come on board. That's what I think about the global space is heading. Definitely, there's a bunch of exciting things around crypto and all these things, but I think that's a story for another day. But for my niche, that's for my side, hypercasual, I think that's where everything is going. In terms of Africa, I think we are at a very interesting place because and I say this because I share the same mindset with Carifas, and I think that's where we blend very well. And that is there is still a lot to be done in Africa in terms of the infrastructure around gaming. And what I love about this space is that it's moving. Like, finally, we can see that there are people who are coming in with the right amounts, with the right like financial muscle to start moving the blocks. But nonetheless, with all that being said, the biggest struggle still remains monetizing within Africa. We can make games. We have a bunch of developers. Even within my networks, I know developers can make games. That's not a question. The question is, how do you make money from games? So you can either go the global way, which is hypercasual, make games for the entire global industry, or if you're going to go local and make an African game that is based on an African theme, then you need to be very smart about how you're going to make money. Unfortunately, we don't have the solid platforms to do that. So if you're going to make money, you're probably looking at talking to clients and companies directly and negotiating a contract. I'll market your product and this and that, product placement and everything. But I think with CarryFast coming into the picture and having a proper look and a proper try at building this centralized way for games to make money, be it direct money payments, mobile money, and all these things, I think that's the biggest problem. If that is solved, I think everything will skyrocket. That's the biggest issue.
Yeah. I mean, definitely. And I hear this not just in the gaming space, but you have to go where the market is. And if you're able to get into the US or European market, because the returns per each individual is higher, it makes sense for you to be there. But I think long term, Africa is also a huge market. And being able to grab that market early on could be an early advantage. And that seems to be what CarryFast is also thinking about when they're approaching this. So we'll see how it goes. Definitely the Web3 space is going to be very interesting with mobile games. But that's conversation for another day.
just to add something on that. I was talking to one of my team members just today, actually. And it's something we say between ourselves quite a lot. And that is, for us, how we are looking at the African industry and where the company will be positioned, the studio as making games. I think we are uniquely placed in a position where we've hit the global charts. We understand what it takes to do that. And as many say, it's kind of like, how do they say it? Success is preparation meeting opportunity. So we are planning to be as prepared as possible. We've had this global hit so that when it's time for Africa now, we'd love to be the best positioned studio to put out those proper African hits that will stand out. And there's less to experiment when you've already done it before. So yeah, that's how we're looking at it in terms of the studio.
Are you saying you've been there, done that? Let's do this again.
Long story short.
Where does the name Mekan Games come from? How did you decide that that's the brand you're going with?
So this is one of those things that sounded really cool in my head back then. but as time has gone by, it's a bit silly. But remember when I was starting to make games just as an individual without a team? Back then I was very young and it's not easy. So initially I wanted it to be Icon. But Icon sounded like Apple, iMac. You know, you just can't have the normal word and then put an I in front of it. So I changed the I to me. So it's me, Khan. That's okay. Kind of like the thing, yeah.
I have the Me I Love Kenya signs in the house and the fridge magnet. So it also goes with like the Kenyan English of me, I.
Exactly. It's why like it kind of made sense. But it's kind of those things it's really hard to explain to a foreigner, you know.
Dramatically wrong.
They don't get the... You will break down English around. Yeah.
Cool. This is good. Obviously, we shall be watching to see what your next games are. I have downloaded the game. I
have not played it yet. I think I shall play it now that I've
Right.
talked to you already. So yeah, clearly not everybody stays only for 14 days. Some of us stay with it for longer.
Yeah, we do have those guys who stick for it for years and years. We don't know how they do it, but when you're looking at the data, there's always that group of people who have gone past 28 days and they're still going, and you wonder, what are these guys playing? Because you've made the game and you know there's nothing there.
That was a very insightful conversation we had with Kiragu. I hope you enjoyed it. In the next installment of this three-piece series on gaming in Africa, I will be talking to the spokesperson for the Pan-African Gamers Group, Mr. Dawit Abraham. So stay tuned.